जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानन्द जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानन्द Charitamrita, Antya Lila, Chapter 8, Ramachandra Puri criticizes the Lord. Text 18. Purveyave Madhavendra Karena Antardana Ramachandra Puritage Ayvatanrastana. Formerly, when Madhavendra Puri was in the last stage of his life, Ramachandra Puri came to where he was staying. Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh, my Lord, I did not get shelter at Mathura." Then Ramachandra Puri was so foolish that he fearlessly dared to instruct his spiritual master. Tumi Purna Brahmananda Karaha Smarana Brahmavit Kanyakene Karaha Rodana. If you are full in transcendental bliss, he said, you should now remember only Brahman. Why are you crying? Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma-bhuta prasanatma. A Brahman-realized person is always happy. Nasochati nakamshati. He neither laments nor aspires for anything. Not knowing why Madhavendra Puri was crying, Ramachandra Puri tried to become his advisor. Thus he committed a great offense, for a disciple should never try to instruct his spiritual master. So there are many important lessons in this pastime. But the most fundamental principle that we all must understand is that there is a difference between material activities and spiritual activities. Impersonalists have experience of material activities. All of us have experience of material activities. And they bring pain. Inevitably, sooner or later, they bring pain. So a foolish person will continue to engage in the same activities that bring pain. Our godbrother, His Holiness Sridhar Swami Maharaj, used to quote some authority, Albert Einstein, some authority, that to continue to engage in the same activities and expect a different result is a type of insanity. So ordinary people, they engage in material activities which result in pain. But they continue to engage in them, thinking that if they learn how to do it a little better, then the next time it won't bring pain, it'll bring pleasure. But when it brings pain, the next time they think, okay, you know, back to the drawing board, we'll just redesign it in a little different way, and then it'll bring happiness. But it never does. Ultimately, all material activities result in frustration and disappointment. So, a more intelligent person will think that these activities are bringing me pain, so I don't want to engage in these activities. But if they have no association with pure devotees, they will have no idea of spiritual activities, and they will think that the alternative is to cease activity, to cease thinking, feeling, desiring, and acting. But as we have all experienced, and as Srila Prabhupada and the scriptures have informed us, it is not possible to stop activity. I mean, I was in that category, and I was, you know, reading books by impersonal speculators. I mean, now I say speculators. At that time, I had no conception of the difference between speculation and knowledge. I mean, I had gone through the educational system provided in America, and pretty much everything we were taught was speculation. And we, in turn, were taught that we should speculate. And so I had no conception. In fact, in the early days of the Boston Temple, under Srila Prabhupada's instruction, we had Istogosti. And Istogosti meant discussing spiritual topics. And we were very new, and Srila Prabhupada said specifically, Istogosti means to repeat the words of the spiritual master. In other words, he didn't want us to speculate. So there was a discussion on one of the purports to Sri Brahma Samhita, which we just recited, and, you know, about how the material world is like a cloud, and there, you know, very variegated vegetation, but after some time, you know, it's all wound up. So there's a discussion. And I made a point that seemed to me quite appropriate. I had begun as an English major, and so I used my interpretive powers. And I didn't even think of it. I just explained how I thought, what that meant about me. And then immediately all the devotees looked at me and said, "That is speculation." I thought, oh my God, I wasn't even conscious that I was speculating. And it took me a while to understand it. To me it seemed obvious, it was right there in the purport. But when I looked more closely, I saw there was a little leap from what was in the purport to what took place in my mind and what was in my mouth. So before, at a certain stage, I had understood that, you know, material activities ultimately resulted in frustration and pain. And so I was reading books like How to Get Out of It. And they were all by impersonalists. And I was trying to apply what I was reading. And it was another form of frustration, but I didn't know of any other alternative, so I just kept at it. And then when I met Srila Prabhupada, I was so relieved because he spoke the truth. I was so relieved. Like one of the speculators, and I think these philosophies have always been around and probably always will be around, but one of the speculators was saying that you should live in the moment. You should live in the present. And you shouldn't think of the past or future. So I was diligently trying to apply it. And then, you know, I'd be walking, trying to experience the moment. And I'd come to a street that I had to cross. And I thought, I'm failing. Because I'm looking to see the traffic on the street. And I'm calculating into the future. Will I be able to cross the street before that automobile reaches? I had to, for my own self-preservation. But I thought that, you know, there's... Until I met Srila Prabhupada, I thought there must be something wrong with me because, you know, these are like popular teachers and have many followers. And then when I met Srila Prabhupada, it was such a relief. And I realized that it's not practical. It's not real. And another thing that Srila Prabhupada said is that as long as we have material bodies, we have to suffer the repetition of birth, death, old age, and disease. And we want to get out of this. Now that made sense. Because even, you know, living in the moment, giving up desires, didn't get rid of disease, old age, and death. Those were very real problems. And it was so refreshing to hear someone speak the plain truth. You know, like call a spade, is like, these are miseries, and we don't want them. But as long as we have them, physical body, we have to endure them. And the only way to get free from them is to become free from the bondage of accepting one body after another. And that is by devotional service.
Now, this verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted in the purport, Bhagavad Gita 18:54, is very relevant because although by Srila Prabhupada's grace and the grace of the parampara, we can understand things in a proper perspective. But one could, without proper association, misunderstand it. You know, Brahma-bhuta, I mean, we know, so Brahma-bhuta means one who is on the Brahman platform, who's realized Brahman, nasochati nakamshati. He has no hankering and no lamentation. So one could misunderstand this, that because in material life the whole day is just hankering and lamenting, there's nothing else to it. One could think that it means there's no thinking or feeling or willing. It's just like void, you know. Vaisheshika Prabhu once gave an example of how there's no satisfaction in the material world. And it stuck with me. And since I heard it from him, I've experienced it again and again and again. You're in a car or in someone's house, and you feel too warm, so you take off your sweater so that, you know, vigilant driver or host, he's hot, so they'll turn down the temperature. So then it's too cold. He doesn't have a sweater on anymore. So he puts a sweater on again, and the host thinks, oh, he's feeling cold, and turns up the temperature. And it's like an endless cycle of trying to adjust, you know, between the sweater and the thermostat, and it's never right, because it's just the nature of the world. Yes, so, but we, as spirit souls, cannot obliterate thinking, feeling, desiring, or acting, but we have to change the purpose. Instead of acting for ourselves, for our sense gratification, we act for Krishna's pleasure. And that's the difference between kama, you know, lust, and prema, pure love. And there is hankering and lamenting on the spiritual platform. I mean, I'm quoting Srila because I experienced the instructions from him first, many of the instructions from him first. Later, I found them in the scripture. And that was also amazing as I read more and more. So many things that I'd heard from Srila Prabhupada kept manifesting in the scripture. And my God, everything he said is from the scripture. But of course, he said it with such realization and conviction and naturalness that, you know, you would have thought it was just coming from him. So, one day he said, our only lamentation, and he paused, like very dramatic, it was like a good teaching approach. He said, our only lamentation is So after I'm thinking, what's coming next?
trying to complete the sentence
in my mind.
How do you complete the sentence? Yes?
We are separated from Krishna.
Partial answer. That's true. Good. Our only lamentation is that people are not taking to Krishna consciousness. And then later I found the same statement in Srimad Bhagavatam. Can any of you think of where the statement is? Exactly, Prahlad Maharaj. Asocha. For myself, I have no difficulty. My only lamentation is for the poor, conditioned souls who are suffering without Krishna consciousness. So, now, another important instruction in this section relates to committing offenses. And Srila Jiva Goswami has discussed the effects of committing offenses in the Sandarbhas. And one effect of committing offenses is that one becomes prone to commit further offenses. And this is visible in the case of Ramachandra Puri. Another effect is that one becomes inclined to the association of people who are faithless. Generally, offenses arise from faithlessness. So one becomes inclined to that association. And another effect is that one becomes filled with material desires. And those material desires can take the form of the gross desire for sense gratification, or the more subtle desire to merge and become one with Brahma. So it's a very serious topic. And Srila Rupa Goswami explains that the five Panchanga Bhakti, the five most potent forms of devotional service. Can you tell me what they are? One per person, won't ask. Raise your hands. Yeah,
chanting Hare Krishna.
Yes, chanting the holy name.
Living at a dham.
Yes, residing in the holy dham.
Deity worship.
Yes, worshipping the deity with faith and veneration.
Reading Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And? Yes, sadhu sangha. And Rupa Goswami defines sadhu sangha as associating with devotees who are more advanced than oneself and have a similar affection for the Lord. And when devotees have a similar affection for the Lord, they're naturally affectionate towards each other also. So Rupa Goswami says that even a slight association with any one of these items
will immediately awaken ecstatic love of God. So the question arises that we associate with these processes on a regular basis, if we can. But we don't awaken ecstatic love of God. Of course, we may have a sense of it. I mean, you definitely do here. So why? So the condition, not exactly the condition, but what Rupa Goswami says, if one has even a slight association with these, any one of these five processes, one will awaken ecstatic love for Krishna. If one is free from offenses. So this is an important topic. It's subtle, but it's there. And when we take up the process or make the effort to chant without offense, means without distraction, with attention, we will see how many different thoughts pass through our mind. And those thoughts have underlying conceptions. You know, basically that I'm the body. I mean, most of it's related to the body. Either gross, like, I'm getting hungry, when can I take prasad? To the more subtle ones, like, you know, how are people regarding me? You know, are they appreciating me? You know, but again, if we stay steadfast in the practice, these things will vanish. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of making ghee from butter. The impurities come up. And you just wipe them off. But then more come up, and you wipe them off. And then eventually none come up, and it's like pure ghee. So the fact that these things come up need not discourage us as long as we remain steadfast in our effort. They come and they go, the holy name takes care of them. It may be that some are a little persistent. And in that case, we may want to discuss what is this. I seem to have some obstacle, and I need help to overcome it. So then we consult some senior devotees and read, go deep in the scripture to try to find the answer. And often a combination. And then, the chanting gradually becomes more relishable. I mean, you still have to make that effort, but it becomes more relishable. And one experiences spiritual desires for the service of the Lord. And may experience that spiritual lamentation of being separated from Krishna, or others not coming to Krishna.
And there's a beautiful verse in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam which says that the desires keep coming like waves in a river, and are hard knotted, and these hard knotted desires for material enjoyment cannot be overcome by others. And in the verse, others means who are not devotees. They cannot overcome them. But devotees who are engaged in the service of Krishna can easily overcome them. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that, yes, the waves of desire come incessantly. But just like a river flows into the ocean, and sometimes at high tide, the waves of the ocean overflow the waves of the river. And they become more prominent than the waves of the river. So in the same way, one's desires to serve Krishna can become more prominent than one's selfish desires for sense gratification. And those desires become more prominent. In other words, we replace the inferior desires with superior ones. You don't try to stomp out desire, suppress desire, which is not possible. And, Srila Prabhupada himself exemplified the principle. And, he was always full of the desire to preach, to spread Krishna consciousness, to bring others to Krishna. So Ramachandra Puri, he totally misunderstood. It's explained here that he was a latent impersonalist. And so when he saw his spiritual master expressing spiritual lamentation, he misunderstood, and he was like so puffed up and independent that he, dared to instruct him. Now, how did Madhavendra Puri respond? Text 22. Shuni Madhavendra Mane Krodha Upajila Dura Dura Kapishta Bali Bartsana Karila. Hearing this instruction, Madhavendra Puri, greatly angry, rebuked him by saying, "Get out, you sinful rascal." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ramachandra Puri could not understand that his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, was feeling transcendental separation. His lamentation was not material. Rather, it proceeded from the highest stage of ecstatic love for Krishna. When he was crying in separation, "I could not achieve Krishna. I could not reach Mathura." This was not ordinary material lamentation. Ramachandra Puri was not sufficiently expert to understand the feelings of Madhavendra Puri, but nevertheless he thought himself very advanced. Therefore, regarding Madhavendra Puri's expressions as ordinary material lamentation, he advised him to remember Brahman because he was latently an impersonalist. Madhavendra Puri understood Ramachandra Puri's position as a great fool and therefore immediately rebuked him. Such a reprimand from the spiritual master is certainly for the betterment of the disciple. In Srila Prabhupada's preaching, he uses the word rascal. I remember in Vrindavan, Urijan Prabhu, he might have actually played a tape with an excerpt of Srila Prabhupada speaking. And within that short excerpt, Srila Prabhupada used the word rascal 6 times. And, you know, some people maybe don't feel comfortable with that. And so Burijan Prabhu to sort of disarm any thoughts, you know, like Prabhupada is so heavy. Each time Prabhupada used the word, Burijan Prabhu would say, first time, and a second time, third time. Like he was aware. And it was quite charming. But actually, these words do appear in the scripture. And as sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say, I'm not saying, Krishna's saying. I'm just repeating what Krishna's saying. So here, Kapishta, sinful rascal. And Krodha Upajila, anger arose in him. Now this is another, for impersonalists, like this is another no-no. Like you're not supposed to get angry. So it's like from the perspective of an impersonalist, like first he was lamenting. That's also like you're not supposed to lament. And then he became angry. But sometimes it's our duty to become angry, you know, and it's, yeah, but it should be spiritual. I mean, we have to be careful about that. But the idea is that if he had remained close to Madhava, oh my gosh, I turn this off. And then on the way over, I thought, well, what if my Sheshi Kukuru wants to reach me, literally? Like, what if he wants to know how far I am from the temple or something? So I put it. I put it on and then I forgot to. No, it's. But it was the holy name of Gauranga. It's not an interruption, it's our purpose. So anyway, yeah. Because if he had stayed close to Madhavendra Puri, he would have committed more offenses. It was just like completely misunderstanding. You know, completely misunderstanding. So he told him, you know, to get out.
How is it possible that a disciple of Madhavendra Puri could be an impersonalist? Because at least in this current moment, right, even before their initiation, everyone is pretty much clear about impersonalism versus personalism. So there is no question of personalism when by the time he comes to initiation. So how is that a disciple of Madhavendra could be a personalist?
Well, it says latent impersonalist, which means it was there, but it was not manifest. But then it came out. And we do have these latent desires, either to enjoy or to merge and become one. And that's what separates us from being completely pure devotees. And, you know, if we're very, like, diligent in our practices and we're fully engaged, then those desires become purified, like we discussed the ghee coming up and getting removed. I mean, the impurities coming up being removed. But if we're not attentive, and for me, I mean, attentive really means to stay always absorbed in Krishna consciousness by chanting, by reading, by associating with devotees. I mean, everything's better in the association of devotees, advanced devotees. So, you know, these things can come up. You know, they can't come up. Otherwise, why do devotees leave? They come, they're initiated, they're clear about the philosophy. And when they take initiation, they probably think, okay, you know, I'm going back to Godhead. And the spiritual master thinks, okay, the soul is surrendering. We'll help him or her go back to Godhead. But these, it's really association, actually. It's really association. And therefore, it's such a basic principle, asat-samtyaga evaishnava-char, the fundamental principle of a devotee is he avoids association with non-devotees. Sri Sangi Eka Sadhu Krishna Bhaktapar. And the reason is that we do have these tendencies. We do. And if we associate with people who are inclined towards fruitive activity, that tendency within us can become more prominent. And it can become more prominent than our desire for pure devotional service. And if we, and the same thing, we associate with people who are like jnanis, mental speculators, and you know, so that tendency within us can become exaggerated by their association. And if it becomes too powerful, it becomes more prominent than our original desire to become Krishna conscious. So, I mean, you know, these principles, these are eternal principles in the scripture, and they're all necessary. But the problem is that if you're like in Grihastha Ashram, which most devotees are, and you're like, you have to work and interact with people in the material world, then it becomes a question like, what does this mean? Like, how can we avoid their association? And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, you know, you can associate with them in a sort of official way,
you know, like, yeah, I mean, you can't, you know, you're like the car, man, you can't. That also could, you know, some neophyte devotees, when they join, especially in the ashram, they, but that's also not necessarily bad. It depends on how they, you know, conduct themselves, but so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says you can have normal interactions with family members who are not devotees or with people in the workplace who are not devotees, but you shouldn't take spiritual advice from them. So, so we have to really cling to the lotus feet of the devotees, the association of the devotees. And Lord Chaitanya also explains it in his instructions to Rupa Goswami about the devotional creeper, that carefully cultivate your devotional creeper, your garden, but if a mad elephant enters, it can like create havoc in your garden in no time. So that mad elephant, of course, is Vaishnava Aparadha. And we have to fence the creeper to protect it from the mad elephant of offense. And the fencing is the association of pure devotees. You have to stay in the circle of pure devotees, and then there will be no scope for the mad elephant of offense to enter. So it's really important. And people will criticize, you know, like, you're so narrow-minded, you're so extreme, you're so fanatical. But it's an art, I guess. It's an art. I mean, I'm thinking of a devotee in Mumbai named Srinathji Das, who was a very big industrialist, Dr. N.D. Desai. And he would be invited to, you know, banquets and dinners and events with people of his level, and he would have to accept the invitations. And he said, at first, you know, he would go there and he wouldn't, like, eat meat. Of course, you don't eat meat. And he would get into arguments. What's wrong with eating meat? And that's what becomes the whole argument. Then they offer, you know, drinks. I refuse. What's wrong with drinking a little alcohol, you know? Then that became a whole argument. Then he devised a different strategy. He would phone ahead and say, I'm allergic, you know, to meat, fish, eggs, onions. And the whole attitude was different. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, what can we make for you? Is there anything we can do, make for you that you can eat? It was like completely different. And then as far as the drinks, you know, he'd go to the bar or whatever they had and pick up an empty cocktail glass and put limca in it or something that looked like what everyone else was drinking. And he'd be going around with his, you know, they're thinking like he's drinking champagne or something. And it was 7-Up, so. Yeah, sometimes we don't want to compromise our principles, but sometimes it's just you just get into useless arguments with people who are not
interested, so, you know, that was how he figured it out. It's probably, you know, wise to do that. And, So we want to avoid antagonizing people, but at the same time we have to keep our principles and also keep our distance. I think many devotees, including me, have experience trying to make family members Krishna conscious and not having very good results, and realizing it's better not to fight. And this is just one example, but His Holiness Rudraksha Goswami told me that whenever he would visit his mother, they would always get into huge arguments. And finally they decided to make it like a peace treaty. That he won't preach and she won't criticize. So, some way or other, it's probably better to come to some sort of accommodation like that, because otherwise. And that's why the Shastra says, Prema Maitri Kripa Peksha. One should give one's love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, make friends with devotees, show mercy to the innocent by telling them about Krishna, and avoid the envious, neglect the envious. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that means that you shouldn't preach to them. Because if you do, they'll just become angry. And then you'll become angry. And the hostilities will increase. So he said it's better not to preach to them. But one can pray for them. Like Prahlad Maharaj. He said this is like Vaishnava Acharya. One can pray for them, but one shouldn't. And one can try to engage them in ways without them even knowing that they're engaging in your shastra. Srila Prabhupada told a story. Anyway, there's a context, but basically he was making the point that you can't force someone. If they want to do service, you can't force them. But you can trick them. And so he told the story of a boy who had an aversion to arithmetic. And like some people have an aversion to serve Krishna. And so the teacher was thinking, how can I get this boy to learn arithmetic? So then she had the idea, or he had the idea, to draw figures on the board. So, you know, she drew, say, two cows. And then she drew a goat. So she said, if the farmer has two cows and then he gets one goat, how many animals does he have? And he said, three. And then if he gets, you know, like this, something, and then if he sells some, then how many does he have left? Two. So the boy was learning arithmetic. And then his friend, who was sitting next to him, said, can't you see what's happening? The teacher's getting you to learn arithmetic. And the boy said, arithmetic? I hate arithmetic. So, yes, so Prabhupada gave that as an example. So we can do that. We can't force, but we can trick. And some people, they just have that quality, that aversion to Krishna, to God, to serving God. So, So we'll just finish up here. Verse 23. Krishna painu na painu matura apanadu ke maron e diti ayalajwala. Oh my Lord Krishna, I could not reach you, nor could I reach your abode, Mathura. I'm dying in my unhappiness, and now this rascal has come to give me more pain. This is really heavy. But I mean, it shows that devotees are persons. They have all the sentiments that anyone else has, but it's all with Krishna as the center. And that was like what we learned from being with Srila Prabhupada, and what we learned from being with advanced devotees, and what we learned from scripture. That they have anchoring, they have lamentation, they have anger, they have everything. But it's all from Krishna. Mora muka na de kavi tuyao yati tati tore de ki maila mora habe asakati. Don't show your face to me. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life. Krishna painu muni maron apanaraduke mora brahma upadeshe e charamurte. I am dying without achieving the shelter of Krishna, and therefore I am greatly unhappy. Now this condemned foolish rascal has come to instruct me about Brahman. Murka, it's in the Bengali. Fool. Eye shri maravendra shri pada upeksha karila. Say aparade inhara vasana janmila. Ramachandra Puri was thus denounced by Madhavendra Puri due to his offense. Gradually, material desire appeared within him. Purport. The word vasana, material desires, refers to dry speculative knowledge. Such speculative knowledge is only material. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4, a person without devotional service who simply wants to know things, kevala bodha labhyate, gains only dry speculative knowledge but no spiritual profit. This is confirmed in the Bhakti Sandarbha 1.11, wherein it is said, Jivan mukta api purnar yanti samsara vasana yadya chinta maha shakto bhagavatya paradina. Even though one is liberated in this life, if one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he falls down in the midst of material desires, of which dry speculation about spiritual realization is one. In his Lala Toshini commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, Jiva Goswami says, Jivan mukta api purnar bandhanam yanti karmabhi yatya chinta mahashakto bhagava japaradina. Even if one is liberated in this life, he becomes addicted to material desires because of offenses to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A similar quotation from one of the Puranas also appears in the Vishnu Bhakti Chandrodaya. Jivan mukta prapadyante kvachit samsara vasana yogino na vilipyante karma bir bhagavat para. Even liberated souls sometimes fall down to material desires. But those who fully engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not affected by such desires. End quote. These are references from authoritative revealed scriptures. If one becomes an offender to his spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he falls down to the material platform to merely speculate. Shuksha brahma jnani nahi krishneva sambandha sarvaloka nindakare nindate nirbandha. One who is attached to dry speculative knowledge has no relationship with Krishna. His occupation is criticizing Vaishnavas. Thus he is situated in criticism. Now, we come to the other example. Ishwara Puri Gosani Kare Sripada Sevana Swahaste Kare Namala Mutradi Marjana. Ishwara Puri, the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, performed service to Madhavendra Puri, cleaning up his stool and urine with his own hand. Ishwara Puri was always chanting the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna for Madhavendra Puri to hear. In this way, he helped Madhavendra Puri remember the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna at the time of death. So, Sri Ishwara Puri's service was exemplary. He served his spiritual master physically by cleaning up his stool and urine with his own hand. In other words, he rendered the most intimate menial service to his spiritual master's body. And at the same time, he would always chant the holy names and pastimes of Krishna for his spiritual master to hear, which was meant to help his spiritual master remember Krishna at the time of death. So this is real service, real Vaishnava seva, that we serve each other's physical bodies, and we help each other to remember Krishna. And this is the opposite, the opposite of criticizing devotees is serving devotees. And if we're engaged in that mood of service, then no chance of committing offenses. And what was the result? Pleased with Ishwara Puri, Madhavendra Puri embraced him
and gave him the benediction that he would become a great devotee and lover of Krishna. Thus, Ishwarapuri became like an ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna, whereas Ramachandrapuri became a dry speculator and a critic of everyone else. Ishwarapuri received the blessings of Madhavendrapuri, whereas Ramachandrapuri received a rebuke from him. Therefore, these two persons, Ishwarapuri and Ramachandrapuri, are examples of the objects of a great personality's benediction and punishment. Madhavendrapuri instructed the entire world by presenting these two examples. His Divine Grace Madhavendrapuri, the spiritual master of the entire world, thus distributed ecstatic love for Krishna. While passing away from the material world, he chanted the following verse: Ayi Dina Dayadra Nathahe Mathura Natha Kadava Lokshaye Hridayam Tvad Aloka Kartaram Daita Brahmyati Kinkaram Yaham. O my Lord, O my most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? In this verse, Madhavendrapuri teaches how to achieve ecstatic love for Krishna by feeling separation from Krishna. One becomes spiritually situated. Madhavendrapuri sowed the seed of ecstatic love for Krishna within this material world and then departed. That seed later became a great tree in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have incidentally described the passing away of Madhavendrapuri. Anyone who hears this must be considered very fortunate. So this mood of ecstatic love and separation from Krishna is Sri Madhavendrapuri's special contribution. And as mentioned here, he planted that seed of ecstatic love and separation and then departed. And that seed became a great tree in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when we say that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, in the form of a devotee teaching us how to develop love for Krishna, he did it by engaging in the same activities that we engage in, especially chanting the holy names. First and foremost, chanting the holy names. I'm hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, living in a holy place, or coming to the temple, living in the temple, making your home into a temple, worshipping the deity,
But he also came to teach an internal mood, and the internal mood is the mood of separation. And that mood was taken up by the six Goswamis and all of our acharyas. And when we have that mood, then our spiritual life accelerates. I'll tell a little story because it is a high concept. And to develop the mood of separation, you have to have some attachment. Anyway, this is and I won't comment more on it. I'll just tell the little experience from St. Lucia. There's a very nice devotee couple who lived in St. Lucia. The husband's still there, but the daughters have grown up, so the mother moved with them to Alachua's for their education. But, they were like perfect house. They had a beautiful big house near the ocean. And it was really a perfect situation. I mean, I wouldn't even call it a holiday, but in a way, after whatever it was, 35 years, I like I took a break. Not a break from Krishna consciousness, of course, but a break from my regular duties. So they were perfect. They were perfect. They had I wouldn't say they had no desire for personal reciprocation, but they placed no demand for any reciprocation. They said, you're here to rest and, chant and read. And, don't worry about us. We're just here to serve you. And it was wonderful. I was chanting 32 rounds. But that was also very interesting. I thought I'll just chant and read. But after chant, I think maybe the second or third day was a codicil, and I just felt like inspired internally to write. So, but it was good. There was like no time for anything except chanting 32 rounds and writing, and I was reading at that time. And I was reading Shrutikirti Prabhu's. No, that time I was reading about the holy name. Yeah, and just before rest I had read Shrutikirti Prabhu's book, What is the Difficulty? But anyway, at the end of the stay, well, what was supposed to be the end of the stay, there was a hurricane. So all the flights were canceled and the airport was shut down. And then, my friend Ritarpa just swung. By chance, he was, I don't know what, he saw on the news that there was a hurricane and then the airport had shut down and all the flights were canceled. And there were hundreds of people who would have to be rebooked. But they couldn't make any bookings because the airport was closed down, the computers were down, and the telephone lines were out. So there was nothing really, just on this island. So Ritarpaja Swami phoned the airline on my behalf and booked me. So so eventually, when things got working again, I had a reservation and no one else did because there was no computer or
phone connection. But I was sad to leave. I mean, it was like just so nice. I mean. And so driving from their house to the airport, you know, there's certain, you know, attractive scenes or distracting scenes that I, you know, you look out the window and you see, you know, the ocean, the beach, the mountains, the banana trees and palm trees and the billboards and the stores. But I was feeling separation. I mean, superficially, you could say it was like separation from the situation, house and family. But it was actually, because in that setting, I was having like nice association with Krishna. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to maintain that quality of association with Krishna when I left. And that ride to the airport, I had no interest in the waves, in the sand, in the billboards, in the shops. I guess I had no interest. I was just absorbed in that like mood of separation that I'm leaving this wonderful experience I had. And then I realized that's the mood of separation, that when you feel separation from Krishna, and this is, of course, on a much higher level, you don't want anything except Krishna. Nothing else has any importance. And so that, you know, vairagya arises naturally. I mean, there is smashan vairagya that Srila Prabhupada talks about, the sense of renunciation that arises at the crematorium. I mean, I've seen that myself. You know, I've seen, you know, been to the cremations of very big people in Bombay. And another very big, because that, you know, that's sort of how it is, the big people, their circle is other big people, so they come. So one man came up to me, very big builder, main business was building. And, you know, he came up to me, he said, you know, what's the use of all this making money, becoming rich, you know, becoming famous? What's the point of all this? It just ends up like this. So those feelings arise, but they don't last. Unless one is a devotee. If one's a devotee, then any situation can be an impetus in Krishna consciousness and it can be sustained. But, you know, it disappears. I was saying, he was back to building more buildings, and I was back to looking at billboards. I was seeing all the signboards, you know, another building by Raja. But this is really, when we get a little taste, then we can feel separation, or detachment, we can feel separation. And that's a very, very important part of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his line have taught us, came to teach us and have taught us. So we can at least be aware of it and aspire for it, pray for it. And when we're in this wonderful association, we do get attached to that association. We do get attached to the practices, and we feel separation. So that's good. And in that, you know, sort of natural, when you're in the mood of separation, you want to overcome it
way to overcome it is to absorb yourself more. So that's, and that's the goal. So, Hare Krishna. Vaisheshika Prabhu said, I have as much time as I want. I hope I didn't take too much advantage of that instruction.
Maharaj, thank you for coming here regularly and infusing us with your deep realizations and the conclusions of the scriptures. Thank you. In fact, we only, you know, create this community and do what we do in order to attract advanced devotees. We realize without your association, without the association of advanced devotees, we don't have any impetus to keep going. So we feel fulfilled today that you're here and satisfied. But we want more. And to get it. One thing is that I had some very happy news relating to Islamist Giriraj Swami, and that is that he mentioned in his last few paragraphs that he had been writing, and I don't know where he finds time to do it. It's a mystic power. But he does it. He's empowered to do it. And the happy news I'm referring to is that he's come out with another book. Not only has he come out with another book, but I'm holding it in my hand, but I feel so honored that he decided that he would launch the book right here at ISV today. So just say, for in case Maharaj wants to say something about the book, that we'll be able to take Maharaj away with us in this book. What we felt here today, which was that he was pouring from his heart all the experiences, all the realizations that he's gotten by his ardent hearing, his perfect service to his spiritual master and all the devotees. It all comes out, and it's preserved in the pages of the book. So one could, for instance, recline into one's room, open the book, and then feel Maharaj's association again through this book, and enter into that zone of complete concentration on the principles of pure devotional service, which are all here. And I say that without having read the book. I have complete confidence that that's what the book will do for one. So, this is the book I have in my hand. Would you like to say anything about the book?
Well, the book is called Life's Final Exam. Death and Dying from the Vedic Perspective. And it went through an evolution. And I'm telling the story for two reasons. One is it reinforces the idea of how important association is. And the other is it also shows how merciful Krishna is. But I was
I had envisioned the book more for devotees. Of course, it is for devotees. When Prabhupada said his books are primarily for his sincere followers, but they're for everyone. And I, this is sort of on the top, you know, about associating with devotees you don't often associate with. I read an article about how architecture can foster association, and there have been. I know it's a whole topic, but the idea is that people figured out, entrepreneurs or researchers, have figured out that when people from different disciplines meet, it produces good results. So they started to design buildings in such a way that, like, to get to, say, the water fountain or some common place that everyone goes to, people from different departments come there and meet by chance. And they get to talking, and there's, like, you know, cross-pollination. So anyway, so one devotee that I don't meet often, but I happen to speak to about something completely unrelated, I just mentioned the book. And I was thinking, like, who to get to write the foreword. And he said, and I was, you know, I mentioned some devotees, but somehow I just couldn't figure out who the right person was. And he said, you know, you could get any one of these devotees to write the foreword, and it won't sell one more copy. Because when devotees see your name, they'll want to buy the book. You should get someone who's not a devotee to write the foreword, and that will sell copies to people who are not devotees. So, you know, I thought about it, thought, well, yeah, you know, why not? It makes sense. And I didn't know where to turn, because I don't know many non-devotees. But I did think of someone that I had met when we were building the hospice in Vrindavan, Mother Sangeeta, who, you know who she is? Anyway, she was a hospice nurse for many years, and she formed an organization called Vaishnavas Care to help devotees at the end of their lives and help their families and loved ones at the end of their loved one's life. And, you know, she took me to, she said, oh, there's a very big figure in hospice care in Houston. You know, maybe we can meet him. So it's sort of a chance. He just sort of took a chance, and he agreed. And we met at some, I don't know if it was Starbucks, something like a Starbucks near the Houston Medical Center. And she said, you know, how we're, you know, we want the hospice to take care of people, like physically and emotionally and spiritually. And she was of the opinion it was sort of like a little harder with Indians to deal with the emotional aspect, because they tend to sort of deny that part or something like that. And he said, no, just focus on the spiritual. That's more important than everything else. So, like, wow. So, when I thought, like, now who am I going to get to write the foreword, I thought of him. So I that was a whole other thing, to trace him and,
you know. But anyway, I did, and I sent him a letter, and I was like so nervous, so worried. And then we were having like a kirtan at Sarvama Prabhu's place in Govinda. I don't know, I just felt, you know, like, don't worry, you know, he'll agree. And then I wasn't worried, and then like 2 days later he sent the email. And so then I thought, okay, but now I need to get some endorsements. So who do I know? So I didn't know him. There was one person I knew. So I wrote him. Turned out he was going senile. He was a professor. He's like going senile. And, you know, I just wanted it. I couldn't get it. And I thought, okay, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Then I wrote some people for some suggestion. I got like three. I wanted three. I got like three really excellent endorsements from people in the field. But then, in the course of this, so when I got the one from Dr. Porter's story, I thought, oh my God, I better look at this again. You know, I better make sure this is right. Because a lot of it was spoken the way we speak to devotees. And I thought, I have to go through it again. So I thought, so I went through it and thought, wow, there's a lot we have to change. We have a different audience now. So I changed it. So I thought, okay, this is okay. But then I got one from a professor, a Christian professor, Frank Clooney, who's like the head of Center for Religious Studies at Harvard. So I thought, oh my God, I better go through it again. Because the first time I wanted to make sure it was acceptable and accessible to people in the field of hospice and palliative care. Then I thought, oh my God, he's a devout Christian. I better go through it again. So then I went through it again, mainly to make it accessible, but if there was any little bit of that, you know, transcendental pride and superiority for being devotees, that I should, you know, attend to that as well. So, okay, I thought, wow, this is really good. I'm so glad I went through this exercise. But in the meantime, someone else I had tried, and it was, I wanted three, and this was going to be the fourth, but it came, and I couldn't refuse it. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I better go through it again. So, my editor, Kala Chanji Das, Bhakta Karl, Rizik Tamakrishna Goswami's brother, he said, you know, Maharaj, you can't rewrite the book for every person who reads it. Every single person who reads it is going to have a little different background, a little different perspective. You can't rewrite it for every single person. But the main ones, you know, so like Christians or anyone from a different tradition, and people involved in hospice care and palliative medicine, you know, was basically right. And there were so many things. So then I thought, like, I wanted something about death and dying. I'm mentioning this partly because I know you're writing a book, so I thought, you know, indirectly it might have some relevance, not as. Yeah. So I looked through, I thought a picture of the Manikarnika burning god at Varanasi would be appropriate. It would be to the subject, but not like too, it just seemed right. So I don't know how many hundreds of pictures I looked through on Google Images. It was like, I tried different devotees. It's not a common theme. I was even ready to get one in a burning in Vrindavan. I couldn't get it. So anyway, finally I settled on this one. And there were a lot of defects in the photo. Like there was an empty plastic bottle floating down the sacred Ganges River. And there were other things like that. And I showed it to Giri Hariswami. He said, you know, you've got to get that bottle out of the Ganges. a lot of electric wires dangling everywhere. It was like, I thought, like, so he put a lot into it. And I traced, you know, where it was from on the internet. And I said, do I really need permission? And yeah, you do. So eventually I wrote them, and they have a blog called Two Nomads, One Story. And there, I guess a couple, they're like really nomads. Like, so I thought, how am I ever going to catch up with them? You know, it's like, there's no email. Anyway, I sent it to their blog. But eventually they said, you know, we'd be delighted, we'd be honored. So like everything came together. So I take that as Krishna's mercy, that he wanted to make this accessible to people because it's very important information for them. And so I'll just tell one little story from in the book, which it's sort of relevant to the class. That was another thing. So I thought the book was finished. And I sent it to Mother Sangeeta to read, and she said, what you have is nice, but there's not enough of you in it. Not enough of me in it. You know, what do I have to do? What do I have to do with it? You know, I'm not a nurse, I'm not a doctor, you know. She said, they're not very deep realizations. There has to be more of you in it. That's the problem with the book. So I wrote the story of taking care of my two parents. Two separate stories, but they were woven together. And my father, he had a stroke, and then when they, you know, to deal with the stroke, they wanted to give a blood thinner. But before they could give the blood thinner, they had to do a scan to make sure there's no bleeding in the body. And then they found there was bleeding in the stomach, and then it turned out he had cancer, which he didn't know. So, anyway, he was in the hospital. And, you know, the family felt there should always be someone with him. And it's just like me and my sister. She had her little son and my mother to look after, so I stayed with him. And he was very weak. And, you know, he'd have to, like, get up in the middle of the night and, like, go to the bathroom. And I had, like, maybe there was, like, a sofa in the room that I could take rest on. But like every so often he would need to get up, so I'd help him to go to the bathroom. And sometimes he didn't make it all the way in time. So I cleaned up was really hard to stay awake all night. I mean, there might have been time to doze off, but I was like in such a vigilant state of just any time I heard a sound, I thought it might be him. And a lot of the time it was him. So at the end of this sort of excruciating ordeal of not sleeping and, you know, being on constant alert, he looked at me, I was just putting him back in his bed. He looked at me and he said, "What would you do if I gave you $1 million? And, you know, I didn't really, that wasn't in my mind. I didn't really, you know, I don't even remember what I said. I probably gave some general answer. But when he said that, I thought, this is like Madhavendra Puri and Ishwara Puri. I mean, Madhavendra Puri had the great treasure of love of Krishna. And so he wanted to bestow that upon Ishwara Puri, you know, being pleased with his service. And my father's treasure was his money. And he wanted to, like, bestow that on me. And afterwards, it was a coincidence, so then he came out of the hospital and we took care of him at home in Chicago. And Radhana Swami happened to be visiting his parents at the same time. And he came out to visit me. He was actually scheduled to come. But then it was like the end. The nurses said, okay, this is the end now. He doesn't have long. So I phoned Maharaj and I said, you know, you'll have to come a couple of days later. So he came and I told him the story. And he said the exact same thing. It's like Madhavendra Puri and Ishwara Puri. So it's sort of fascinating how there's sort of there's the material energy and the way it works, and then there's the spiritual energy and the way it works, and then there's it's sort of similarities, but one is for Krishna and one is for Maya. But this was sort of, I've never really discussed this, but it just occurred to me now. But I think it's related to the idea that the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. But it's not always, you know, the Prabhupada said the love of a mother for her child is the closest thing to pure love in the material world. And so we do have glimpses of it, and I guess Varnashram Dharma is meant to help us recreate the consciousness of the spiritual world and the material world gradually. So, I guess that's. So then I thought, you know, at this time, my story was good because in all the other case histories, you could say all the other case histories were of devotees or devotees whose parents were pious Hindus. So I thought, okay, well, this is good. This is the story about someone who they weren't devotees and they didn't become devotees, but they had like sort of successful passings within their traditions. And then I came here went to Vaisheshika Prabhu's house and met Keshava Bharati Maharaj. And he reminded me of the story of his taking care of his mother that was published in that Tathagata. So I included his. Okay, so I thought, wow, okay, we have a non-devotee who became a devotee. And we have non-devotees who had successful passings, but within their tradition. So I thought, but we need an atheist. We don't have any atheists. And then I thought of, she's a devotee, and her father-in-law was an atheist. And at the end, she had told me the story, Kaushalya. At the end, her father-in-law, just at the very end, like within the last, maybe 2 weeks, he became a theist. He didn't become a devotee, he didn't become a Christian, but he became a theist. So I thought, okay, now we have, like, we have all the different combinations and permutations. So, anyway, there's a lot of, I know you, the story of your mother was also quite inspiring. But, you know, maybe that'll be another story for another book. But, I really don't feel it's mine, and I kept myself as the editor because, you know, I had other people's stories and talks, and and as we get older, and as our parents get older, and it's like the subject keeps coming up more and more. So I think it can help anyone. And I do feel, as Maharaj mentioned, I have written other books, but I felt the reciprocation from Prabhupada on this book was a little different, because it's a book that pretty much anyone can read. You know, the others were mainly for devotees, and I felt they had to be written, and they needed to be written. But this is a little different, and I feel like that it's something more of a contribution to, like, the larger community. So, anyway, that's the story of the book.
Did you bring some books with you?
Yeah.
I was hoping you would ask that question. Did we?
Yes, we have limited stuff here.
Limited stuff.
So we will make a special arrangement to serve out prasadam. We'll first of all have Guru Puja, then we serve out prasadam, and then we'll situate Maharaj in the most opportune place where the devotees can come and meet him and have him sign their books. Those of you, please don't mob the table. We will fly in some more if we have to. And he can sign the books, and you can also have his association at that time. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Let's give a rousing applause for Maharaj and his coming here with all his entourage as well, please.